Thank you very much.
Yes.
And it's always a pleasure to share the seat with Leanne. We teach a lot together, and it's always nice. The talk I want to give today is the sort of working title would be White Men and Accountability on Stolen Land. I want to first acknowledge that we are living on land that was stolen from the Ohlone people and the Chinook Sioux, who were sent to Warm Springs Reservation, and they're still not recognized by the federal government. And the Ohlone people are not recognized by the federal government either. And I want to talk, mostly I want to talk about accountability. And the reason I want to talk about accountability is because when I think about being a white guy in America, when we have a known sexual predator in the White House and a known sexual predator on the Supreme Court, and holding space for the women in my life this last couple of weeks has been really interesting to me, to be reminded of the experience of women on a regular basis. And how do I hold myself accountable to the patriarchy as it exists in the world today? And then, of course, I woke up this morning and it was Indigenous People Day, and that always sort of makes me think about we're living on stolen land and how do I stay accountable? For me, I'm gonna talk about sort of 9 points of accountability, and I'm gonna probably focus mostly on Indigenous people, but I really wanna say that I think that this applies to my racism, my sexism, and my sort of ableism and my internalized homophobia. And 'cause I think that as we practice and we start to get in relationship to our body, and then we start to notice, oh, my body bumps up in the world against all these other bodies. And then you start to see the impact of the communities I belong to in this place. I also want to say that when I first came out, I sort of got adopted by the lesbians around me. And so my first sort of politic was feminist politics more than queer politics. And so I've always sort of had this taint, or this, tinge of feminism that runs through most of my politic. So how do we hold ourselves accountable? How do we recognize our impact in the world? And also, how do we start to undo that stuff, right? I'm really committed to understanding how we can undo these unconsciousnesses as we bump into each other. And so I think the first piece that I will really want to recommend is remembering that history is written by the people in power. And so the history that I learned in school is not, it's one side of the story. And that I had to really put a lot of effort into learning the rest of the story. You know, there's a huge amount of, a wealth of writings by Indigenous people, by women, about their history, and people of color have as well. And so start from there, like really learn what history is actually about. And not from a place of shame or guilt, but really just, I really wanted to know what I didn't know, right? Like I became aware that I didn't know a lot of stuff. And I would read James Baldwin or Audre Lorde or these other authors, and I would realize, like, oh, this is stuff that I never you know, I grew up in a mostly white environment. And so I never got exposed to this stuff. And as I started to get through my friends and started to get close, I also had a lot of really great friends who loved me enough to tell me when the impact of my actions hurt them. And I'm really lucky that it was explained to me very young in my life, in my adult life, very early in my adult life, that this was, that these sort of conversations were coming from a place of love. And so when my friends now say this, that's what I hear is, oh my God, they love me and they want me to be better. So when my friends who are people of color express to me that they were somehow hurt or affected by something that I did, I can start to be accountable mostly by understanding that it's about love. It's about, I want to be in relationship with these people, and I want to reconcile these relationships, and I want to be intimate with the people who in my life. And so I want to start from that place, right? So this is how I think, as a white guy, to recognize the privilege and power, and then to realize, like, oh, and I can wake up, and I can do better, and I can unpack these things and have these really wonderful relationships with amazing people in my world, right? So in making space for my women friends today, one of my friends actually gave me a really wonderful article that was put out in 2016 by Everyday Feminism. And it's 9 Ways to Be Accountable When You've Been Abusive. And it was written, it's an article written specifically for people who have been physically abusive to women. And when I was reading it this time, and I actually seen it years ago, but when I was reading it this time, I realized, like, because I was, in my mind, I was thinking about Indigenous People Day, and I was thinking about this talk, and I started to see, oh, wait, this is actually how I think we can stay accountable in general. How we can reconnect to what it is that brings us together. So I'm going to go through them quickly, and then I'll break some down. So the first one is to listen to the survivor. For me, listening to the person who is impacted by whatever it is that I have done. When I started to teach a book group for white men, gay white men, studying racism. And what I did was, is I wrote to a friend of mine and I said, hey, I've been asked to do this group, and I want to be accountable to a person of color. Can I pay you to listen to me when I talk about this group, and tell me how I'm doing? And so we have this relationship now where I write to him at the end of the group that meets once a month, and then I listen to what he has to say to me about where I did well and what I could work on and all of those things. And it's been really, really helpful for me. So listening, and not listening like just taking in the information, but really letting it register, really letting yourself hear what's going on. And then taking responsibility for what happened. In this list, it's called taking responsibility for the abuse. But I think when I take responsibility for my own behavior and my own unconscious bias and my own choices, and I take responsibility for when I fall short, not in a guilt and shame kind of way, but just in a way of like, oh yeah, I screwed that up. I'm really sorry. Like recognizing I screwed that up. I did it. This one. Accept that your reasons are not excuses. I think that I was having a conversation with a woman today about something that's happening in the Zen world, and she was taking some flack for something she said, and I said to her that I said, you know, this is how I was socialized as a guy, to just automatically be defensive. And so anything that sort of threatens my comfort in the world as a white male who is supposed to have everything geared towards me, my initial response is always to be defensive. And even now, I still, when people come to me, I still have that moment in my heart of like, and then I have to remind myself, oh no, this is what you want, and this is how you want to be in the world. Don't play the Survivor Olympics. I think we can easily fall into the trap of the Oppression Olympics. And as a queer guy, I often hear queer white men speak in terms of like the Survivor of or the Oppression Olympics. And I want to say that that's it derails a conversation and it recenters the oppression in a way that doesn't bring us back together. Take the survivor's lead. So when I'm having these conversations, I'm there to listen, right? And also in my life, as I'm starting to learn about unpacking these things, you know, it's interesting to go to an event as a white man, like a Black Lives Matter event or other things, and then I watch other white people try to be in charge. Or the Women's March and seeing the men, sort of hearing men actually grumble, oh, why can't I say something? I'm, you know, so-and-so, and I have, you know, something important. And I'm like, well, because you can't. To recognize all of the ways that I think that my way is always best, and all of the ways that I think that I need to decide how it is that this relationship needs to be repaired or reconciled. And instead, what I need to do is listen and hear what people say and let that register and let the person tell me how they want to come back in relationship with me. To let the, so in terms of events and things like that, to just do what I'm asked to do when I show up, right? And not feel like I have to run things. And the other piece of that is also that, and when I'm in conversations with people who want to hold me accountable, to let them tell me how they want to resolve this, to ask them, what do you need from me? I think also we have to start to learn how to face the fear of accountability. I think that being accountable has taken on a it's become sort of like people are afraid of being called out or all of that stuff. And I just kind of think that's, we're afraid for nothing, right? Like, yeah, we have to recognize that accountability helps us stay in relationship and helps us stay intimate and helps us stay connected and helps us love each other better. And ultimately, I think that Buddhist practice and Zen in particular is really about how do we love each other? How do we stay in our bodies and really connect with each other? Really, separate guilt from shame. I talked a little bit about that. shame is actually, there's Thanissaro Bhikkhu, when Leon and I were talking, taught a class recently. We found these really great resources. Thanissaro Bhikkhu talks about shame and talks about there are two kinds of shame. There's the good, healthy kind of shame that stops us from doing things that hurt other people. And then there's the shame that sort of recenters us and sort of makes it all about us and, you know, creates a spiral where we're just big, giant pieces of crap. And that's not really helpful or useful. And also, guilt is a really important piece. Like, I think that in my life, guilt and shame have helped me to stay committed to this path, have helped me stay committed to undoing patriarchy, to stay committed to undoing racism, to stay committed to decolonizing my life as much as I can, and making those small changes. And also has helped me to recognize when I'm stepping out of line, you know? I think that the more we practice, and the more we work with the precepts, and the more that we hold ourselves to these standards and start to develop an ethic, it becomes like I know when I'm screwing up. You know, like I know when I'm not, when something just didn't feel right in an interaction. I know it. Like when so. Sometimes I don't even, I may not wait for the person to come to me and say, hey, you impacted me in this way and blah, blah, blah. I may go to them and say, hey, something felt off for me in this interaction and I want to check in with you about how that was for you and invite a conversation. Because the more that I practice, the more that I'm in touch with my own embodiment, the more that I live these precepts out, you know, the road gets a little narrower. The my ability to kind of take the easy way, you know. Angel Kyoto Williams says that if you're feeling comfortable in your practice, you're not working hard enough. And I really like that. Like I need to keep pushing myself to my edge. And what that means is continually sort of deepening my relationship to my body, to my embodiment, to my life, and to my interactions in the world. The eighth one is don't expect anyone to forgive you. I have relationships in my life that are permanently broken. People who do not want to talk to me. And I have to be okay with that. I regret my actions. I've heard them and listened to them, and their choice was to end our relationship. And I had to let that be okay. And that's really hard. That's really freaking hard, because I want to make everybody happy. I want to make everybody love me. It is the single most important thing in the world, is that everybody thinks I'm fantastic. And to sort of be able to sit with those places where you are less than fantastic. You know, to know that there are people walking around on the planet who really don't care for me. And then finally, to forgive yourself. Regardless of how other people decide about how they're going to forgive you or not forgive you, we have to be able to forgive ourselves, to be able to move into a new relationship to our unconsciousness, a new relationship to the violence that we impart in the world through privilege and power. And so I think that my favorite saying about forgiving myself is this wonderful piece that Jasmine Sayadallah, PhD, who is one of the co-authors of Radical Dharma, she wrote, "We are all waking up. It is going to be messy. The good news is that there are brooms and there are rags." To me, that is so wonderful. It's such an encapsulation of what it means to be accountable. As a white guy living on stolen land, wanting to be in relationship with the people around me in ways that support them and sustain them and let them know how much I love them and how important they are to me. You know, that means that there are, sometimes we got to pull out the mops and the rags and clean this shit up. I want to give a couple of shout outs to specifically about Indigenous People Day, and there's a big shell mound in Berkeley that's sacred ground for the Ohlone people, and there was a big fight recently to develop it, which got pushed aside recently, but it's not like the developers are going to give up. So taking part and paying attention to what's happening where you live, on the land that you live on, and showing up for the people when they ask us to. The other piece is there is a group called the Sogorit Land Trust. And I know I'm horrible with this name, but it's an urban indigenous women-led community organization that facilitates the return of Chochenyo Ohlone land in the San Francisco Bay Area to indigenous stewardship. And so what they're asking is for white people to pay land tax, or non-indigenous people to pay land tax, to give a certain percentage of your income to this trust so that they can buy land and put it back in indigenous hands and under indigenous stewardship. And to the best of your ability, I think that it's a great piece that you can do. And you know, I think that that it's really easy for us to sort of think about, oh yeah, I live on stolen land, and then not have to do anything about it. You know, like, oh yeah, I'm a white guy, and I never have to do anything about it. Or I'm a guy, and I never have to do anything about it. But then if you notice your life, you notice things like, recently I was walking to the little corner store by my house, and I was walking back, and a young woman was walking in front of me. And I noticed that she sped up, because women are afraid of men at night, in the dark, on city streets. And so what I did was, as I noticed her walking speed up, I actually crossed the street. And then I went the other way, and I went the long way back to my house. Now, I don't say that because, oh, I'm such a great guy. I say that because what I know is that I notice her fear, and I could do something about that that really didn't cost me a whole lot of anything other than to recognize that it would have been any guy that she was going to be afraid of. So I don't need to take it personal, and I can do something. I can change this woman's experience and just sort of let her know, I'm not following you, you're okay, I'm crossing the street and I'm going this way and I'll take the long way home. We can do things like give to the land trust. We can do things like show up at demonstrations and put our bodies on the line, put skin in the game. We can teach and read and study. There are so many people who are writing such wonderful works about all of these issues. And the best thing you can do is to learn about them. Larry Yang just wrote a really great book about community and building community. And I've been thinking a lot about what it means to create beloved community. And how do we create healing communities so that we can begin to heal from all of the ways in which we have harmed each other. And so Larry's book is a great, I'm in the middle of reading it, which is why it's on my mind. And there are tons of others. I just found out today about a book called An Indigenous People's History of the United States of America by Roxanne something. Anyway, you can look it up. It's I don't know if it's good or not, but it was recommended by somebody I really respect. And so I have every belief that it's a great book. And there's an amazing array of Dharma books about, we're starting in the Dharma world to start to have these conversations. We're starting to have more and more places where women teachers are saying, no, you don't. this is patriarchal and we don't need to do it this way. Let's do it differently. Or there are teachers of color who are saying, let's do it differently. And you know what you're doing here is with this access to Zen, with a focus on how do we create access to our practice. I think that I have so much hope about where Buddhism is, that even in the midst of all of the sort of scandals that have rocked the Buddhist world as of late, I still think that we're doing. We're moving in the right direction, and that there are people fighting a good fight, and that we can create beloved community. 8:38. Thank you all very much for your attention, and I want to just invite questions or comments or. Do you want to say anything?
If you could give us the resources that you named. Okay. I'm
sure. Yeah. So the nine pieces for the accountability were from Everyday Feminism, February 2016, and the Land Trust is on there as well. So yeah, they're great resources. I also want to encourage everybody, learn about, wherever you live, find out who the original people were, who lived in the area that you live. And hear, find out what their story is. Find out what their history is. When I lived in Seattle, you know, learning about the indigenous people in Seattle was really great for me because I learned so much that I didn't even know. So that's the other thing I want to encourage people to do. Find out who the people are, where you live, and what happened to them, where they are, you know, like, where are they? What are they doing? And also there's the sunrise service on that happened this morning that happens at Alcatraz that you can sign up and go and attend. And it's really a beautiful space to be in, to witness people reclaiming their tradition, reclaiming their culture. And it happens on Thanksgiving, and it happens on Indigenous People Day. And it happens at sunrise. Hi. Kazen.
We can't hear you. You're on mute.
I guess this is maybe not really a question. I just want to share that I'm in this funny time in my life where I never intended to be stealth, and I guess like as the years passed and I passed as male, like I've gotten really comfortable. school in this way, and now I've moved to school in Orange County, and I like that being comfortable with queer folks is a very different experience than being comfortable living stealth with straight conservative folks. I'm realizing that I need to take on the challenge of being fully myself and out and available to build community and as a resource without like becoming open or becoming like a or letting the conversation be dominated by, you know, just like really curious
I really appreciate that, and I want to encourage you to you're living behind the orange curtain, and and I want to encourage you. Also, have to stay safe, and you have to, you know, maintain your livelihood, and I don't think that I think it's important for us to speak out when we can and when we feel comfortable, but I don't pretend to know when that's right for other people. And so stay connected to your own experience and trust yourself. And, you know, be safe. Because Orange County can be really rough. I lived in LA for about 9 years, so, and dated a guy who lived down in Orange County. Oh, great.
It's part of settling there now that you, you know. And I will say, I think there is this thing about how much of the time do we, or when do we, like, look and see, well, how is it that I'm not asking for what I want or taking up a space? Speaking out, and when is, you know, like, it's this interplay between, wait, how come things are not supporting me, and then am I doing
right?
What effort do I need to take to establish that for myself or know it for myself?
Right.
There's always this kind of interplay, and obviously for some of us that interplay is. One, there's many more in a place to do, and two,
right.
it has much more costs and messages.
Yeah.
Come, so.
Yeah. And that's what I say about, you know, it's easy for me as a white guy living in San Francisco, in the bubble of San Francisco, to sort of talk about, you know, standing up and, you know, blah, 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 and all of that stuff. And then it's a much different thing for people in other places where they're not in a bubble. And the risks can be much higher for them, both in physical safety, but also just in, like, you know, who the hell wants to sort of get shunned at the grocery store, right? Like, and I think you're right about the knowing, like, spending time to figure out, like, oh, what do I need to do, like, to take my own place, right? Like, that's such a, it's an interesting question, right? Like, how do I take my own place? How do I, and what are the factors involved in that? Socially, but also just, emotionally, and, you know, I know lots of people right now who are feeling very raw and very vulnerable and just don't have the bandwidth to, and, you know, I totally understand it. So,